I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land I'm recording on, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. I'd like to pay my respects to elders past, present and emerging. You're listening to 3CR Community Radio 8:55 AM on your dial, 3cr.org.au as our website where you can listen to all our shows online. My name is William.
And I'm Tilda.
Today we're going to talk about accessible public transport.
So, William, what is accessible public transport?
I think accessible public transport means making travel available for everyone regardless of ability or disability. That includes people with impaired mobility but also with neurological, intellectual and visual impairments. Public transport needs to be designed from the beginning to include access for disabled people, and today we're going to talk about the design of public transport in Melbourne and how it can be improved.
Now, William, you're a big fan of like trains and trams and buses. What is it that fascinates you about public transport?
Well, it's about different services and modes connecting to each other, and you know, and how the three modes we have work together.
So that's like trains, trams and buses.
Oh, yeah. And
the three modes.
Yeah, and how basically each of them work together and...
Like the different interchanges and that kind of thing.
Knowing where to, you know, where you need to change modes or routes.
Yeah, yeah. Because there's a lot of different parts of Melbourne that are easier to get to, maybe on the tram or maybe on the bus. You know, the trains don't necessarily go there.
And also, in some cases, you could use... Sometimes you can actually use both.
Yeah. And how do you do that? How do you figure out the best way to kind of travel around?
Well, having travelled the transport system, you know, since the age of 13, over the years, I've kind of committed a lot of routes to memory, you know, where they go, which way they go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's also the various websites or Transport Victoria, as it's called now, you know, the app, you know, use the journey planner.
Yep,
you know?
Yeah, on your smartphone. And where else do you like to learn about public transport?
Well, there are obviously on social media, various content creators. There's also... A blog which I've been following for some time.
Yeah.
Now, it's called Melbourne on Transit. So if you want to, yeah, you could just type that in, you know, on Google and check it out for yourself. So I see the person who runs it was a transport planner.
Yeah, right.
So now he's created this blog to discuss issues with the transport system, and we might go for a different area or a specific route, talk about its history, you know, its current status and what can be done to improve it. So if you're interested in that, I would highly recommend the Melbourne on Transit blog.
Yeah, it's a good blog. There's a lot of detail on there and a lot of ideas about how things can be improved and changed.
Right. And, well, for me personally, it's made me think about transport in a way I would never have thought possible before.
Mm, yeah, it's really great. And I guess a lot of disabled people, particularly neurodivergent people, seem to just like trains and transport in general, right? That's a kind of a thing amongst like autistic people.
Yeah, that's true. It's common, and for... I got it from my father, who was a train driver for the Victorian Railways.
And yeah, right.
Yeah, he was also autistic, and so I guess he just passed it on to me.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those nice, I guess, cultural things within the disabled community is, these shared interests that can go across generations, and so... Why don't we talk a little bit about your experience on public transport in Melbourne? Because you are vision impaired, isn't that right, William?
Well, that's right.
Yeah. And so what's important to you when you get out onto you know, using, you know, to planning a journey, to traveling across the city, what kind of things are important to you in terms of being able to access the network?
Well, probably one of the most important things is to check on the tram or train or bus, you know, where it's going, you know, the route number.
Mm-hmm.
As well, sometimes there's more than one bus to destination. You know, one might go one way, one might go the other.
Yeah, and so being able to see the signage, like, on the vehicle itself.
Yeah, and also the display screens, which you'll see at various stations. There's the small one at tram stops, and some bus stops have them, not all.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's always an option to receive the information, by pressing a button.
Yeah, right, and it gets read out.
You know, one of those talking boxes, I think that's what they're called.
Yeah. Yeah, so you see them at a lot of train stations. Often they're right next to the emergency button there.
Yeah.
Accidentally gets pushed sometimes. But you're right, not all bus stops have that facility. I know none of the ones on my route. I live out in the western suburbs. If you can't kind of read the sign, you know, what do you do? How do you know which bus is coming to the stop?
Yeah, I'm aware there's a lot of work needs to be done for improving transport in that part of Melbourne.
Mm, yeah. And so that's one part of it, is actually physically being able to tell, you know, what vehicle you're getting on and what direction it's traveling in.
Yeah. See, I think because of my visual impairment, I have made the mistake of getting on the wrong tram, especially on Bourke Street, where both routes end in 6.
Mm, yeah, yeah, easy to do. The 86 and the 96.
Yeah, so I just make sure to look at the number preceding it.
Yeah, yeah, that's important. And easy, you kind of got an
easy mistake to make, especially for someone who hasn't been to Melbourne before.
Yeah, that's right. And so for you, you've been travelling on the network for, you know, over 25 years now.
Well, as I mentioned, I was 13. That's when I started high school. I would catch the bus by myself.
And over that time, you've committed a lot of this stuff to memory. So you kind of...
Yeah, well, I've travelled on a lot of Melbourne's bus routes, train lines, tram lines. I've done most of them by now.
Yep, yeah. And, but you're completely right. If you're new to Melbourne, you know, you're not necessarily going to have that memorized at all.
Yeah, I have been asked by a tourist where to go, and of course I was able to tell them, so I guess in certain cases this knowledge sometimes comes in handy.
Yeah, it's good to be able to share. So what about other aspects of the physical network, about you know, getting on and off of vehicles? Is there anything that's kind of important to you there?
Well, especially if you're going off a tram and the stop happens to be on the side of the road, you want to look, you know, to make sure that no cars are coming or that all the cars have stopped, which I understand by law they're supposed to stop behind a stop tram.
Yeah, yeah, they're supposed to. Doesn't always happen.
They don't always, so I think it's very important to be careful when you're alighting from a tram.
Yeah. And how about things like level access?
Well, I noticed since I started, it actually has improved. A lot of bus operators have transitioned to low-floor buses.
Mm-hmm.
I believe most of the bus fleet across the various operators is low-floor.
Yep.
The trains are pretty good, but there are some stations which still need some work. Like, I'll give you an example, Essendon, which is a train station I used to use a lot.
Yeah, right.
One side of the platform is lower than the other. So I think getting off the train there, you've got to be careful because it is quite a big step down. I've actually hurt my leg a couple of times trying to get off a train there.
That's no good. And that impacts you as a vision impaired traveller. Like, you can't necessarily see straight away what kind of hazards there are. But there's other kinds of disabilities that would also be impacted by that, right?
Yeah, well, if you have physical disabilities or, you know, elderly.
Elderly people, yeah. People with prams and things.
Yeah, that makes it really difficult. So that's, I think that's something that needs to be fixed.
Mm. And yeah, also as a disabled person, you know, you were saying even not, you don't even have to be disabled, as you were saying, lots of people, even if they're just from out of town, need assistance to use the network.
Yeah.
As you were saying, people have asked you, you know, where does this bus go or whatnot when they're tourists.
Yeah.
Disabled people often need assistance accessing the network. What have you noticed in terms of interactions with staff and that kind of thing?
Well, in that regard, I notice most of them are usually quite helpful.
Mm-hmm.
I have had some couple of negative encounters.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, that happens sometimes.
Mm.
But in most cases, I found staff, when I've had to ask them for help, to be pretty helpful.
And of course, not all stations have staff.
No, I think many years ago they used to.
Mm.
So now you just have a premium station, and they're usually interchange stations or in areas with high passenger traffic.
Yeah, yeah. But if you're kind of traveling to an area that, you know, maybe doesn't have as higher traffic, that human assistance from staff is not necessarily something you can count on, is it?
Well, no. I think that's also another problem.
Mm, yeah. So you mentioned a couple of negative experiences there. Would you mind sharing an example of that?
Let's just say I found a certain staff member was being quite aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't understand why.
What brought about that kind of interaction?
Well, I happened to be sitting in a spot where I wasn't supposed to sit, but I didn't know, but this person didn't seem to care.
Yeah, yeah. And how are you kind of, how would you be expected to know where you were,
well,
where I weren't allowed to sit?
Well, exactly. You know, I've been told in a few places, oh, you can't sit here. But yet there's no signs saying that you can't.
Yeah, yeah.
But I noticed on platforms at various stations, a lot of people sit on the ground.
Yeah, yeah. I have a disability, which means I can't stand for a long time. And I've had experiences of that, you know, trying to find a seat in a train station. There's none, so I sit on the ground, and I've been moved on before. And even just in other public spaces, you know, if you are visibly disabled, you know, I sometimes travel with a cane. I feel like if you appear disabled, sometimes you attract negative attention from, you know, security and staff and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I've had problems with security in various places.
Mm, yeah. And it's something that is more likely to happen to disabled people. One, because we, you know, if we are visibly disabled, then, you know, that kind of attracts attention in itself. But as we've mentioned, disabled people also need some of that human assistance sometimes. So we have kind of more interactions with staff than other travellers.
And I think it might make it very difficult to ask staff for help if you've had a bad experience.
Yeah.
Well, when staff has been rude or aggressive. And if you... And in terms of sitting down, I don't see what the problem is as long as you're not in anyone's way.
Yeah, you're not blocking a fire exit or something.
Well, in my experience, this person told me that I was blocking the way, which wasn't true.
Mm, mm. It doesn't feel good to be singled out like that for your disability, does it?
Well, no, definitely not.
No. Nah. Well, I think that's a good start to our conversation. We've kind of outlined some of the ways that disabled people currently are relating to the public transport network. And we'll come back and talk about some of the changes and innovations that we can hope for and maybe advocate for in the future on Melbourne public transport.
Okay, sounds good to me.
See you so soon.
See you.
Wa carries the stories of our ancestors, forever watching over us and protecting us. Join me, Taldum Chogo Edwards, for Balam Wa, a journey of stories, yarns and music about freedom and survival from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. every Thursday afternoon on 3CR, 855 on your radio dial.
As I walk alone on my dreaming track tonight, I can hear the voices of my elders. Their ancient sounds echo in my mind to the beat of clapstick and the dancing.
Disability at its core is anti-capitalist, and disabled people are fundamentally at odds with capitalism.
You're listening to International Day of People with a Disability on 3CR.
Welcome back to 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on your dial. You're joined with myself, Tilda, and your name, Will?
William.
William. Well, welcome back. We've kind of talked a little bit earlier about our, as disabled people, the different ways that we relate to public transport, especially here in Melbourne. What are some of the innovations that we kind of need to improve the accessibility of public transport? Where should we start?
Well, you can start with the clearly that half the tram fleet is still not DDO compliant. That's Disability Discrimination Act, which was supposed to make the public transport system fully accessible by 2022, and you can tell that was 3 years ago, and it's still not entirely DDA compliant.
Not even close, I wouldn't say. I live in Footscray, and there's maybe one stop down near Footscray station, and with a kind of where a low floor tram could take on a passenger with a wheelchair, but I think the next place you could get off is probably at High Point. There's nothing in between.
Well, that's right. So I want to talk about what's happening. Well, on that line, we could use that as an example. So a new fleet of trams called the G Class. So a new depot has just opened, which is exclusively for, the trams when they're out of service, cleaning and maintenance as well.
Yep.
So the new depot was designed with these trams in mind. It's in Maidstone, just down the road from High Point.
Yeah, that's right.
And I believe they're going to commence some testing soon, and I believe they should be rolling out, not only Route 82, but the nearby Route 57 and also Route 59 as well.
And they'll all be low floor trams.
That's right, and there's also proposals to upgrade several stops to include level boarding.
Mm. Yeah, because it's nice to have a low floor tram, but if you still have to take a big step up to get on it, from if you're travelling up Gordon Street or something like that, there's not much. Not much use to someone who's a wheelchair user, for example, or a lot of the elderly people with market trolleys and that kind of thing.
Well, yeah, that's right. And I have seen many people struggle to get up and down the stairs because they are quite steep.
Mm. Oh yeah, yeah.
Especially on the old Z class, which is currently only. That's the only type of tram that runs on Route 82, and also that's the only tram that runs Route 57 as well.
Yeah, yeah. And even in places like Sydney Road, for example, there's a lot of low-floor trams there, but it's certainly you can't just get off and on wherever you like.
Well, that's true. I mean, I grew up, I was always close to Sydney Road.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is, on Route 19, there's a few level access stops in the city. There was one recently opened near the new Parkville Metro Station, not far from the Parkville Hospital precinct. There, and the only The only other one is at Brunswick Road.
Yep.
But the problem is only half the trams used on that run are low floor.
Yeah, right. Even then, you might not even be able to get onto it, the right vehicle. How long would you have to wait, maybe?
Well, that's a good question. Normally, you get a high floor, then a low floor, and so on. Well, you'd hope that's the case.
You'd hope they're alternating. It might,
maybe not necessarily.
So other problems in the network that, like you mentioned, the Essendon station, and one side is kind of, it's on a lean.
Yeah.
And there's a significant kind of gap there. That's obviously going to take a fair bit of work to kind of address that situation, isn't it?
Yeah. And of course, anyone who doesn't use it much wouldn't, probably might not necessarily know that it's there.
Yeah.
And, well, could potentially have an accident.
That's right, yeah. And if it's kind of able-bodied people who are not noticing these things that are issues for disabled people, where's the disabled people's kind of voice in planning, you know, upgrades to the network to avoid issues like that?
Well, as far as I'm aware, that doesn't really happen.
Mm. Yeah, so we really need some efforts to include disabled people themselves and kind of pointing out these access bottlenecks. I think the other one you mentioned in the first half of our program here about just bus stops in general, you know, most of them don't have digital signage. Most of them don't have an audible kind of, you know, you can't hear the bus route. You can't hear, you know, when the next service is going to come by for blind users. And it's crucial for getting,
well, that's right,
for travelling, isn't it? The bus network.
On some bus stops are not that accessible. Like, for example, where I used to live in Pasco Vale,
mm-hmm.
You had to cross. It was a semi-busy road just to access the stop on the other side, because, well, there really isn't any safe place to cross. I think you have to walk up a few hundred metres if you want to use a pedestrian crossing.
Yeah, right.
There's a few bus stops like that. I noticed one had a bit of a sort of hole.
Yeah, yeah.
That you can't see because it's covered in grass, so you can't see it. So anyone who hadn't used that wouldn't know that it's there.
Yeah.
And that could also, as a potential to cause accidents.
Mm. And so issues like this, they don't just, you know, cause unsafety and you know, potential injuries and things like that, but they also make the world a lot smaller for people who struggle to access, you know, physical parts of the city where they might like to visit. Maybe you've got friends in a suburb that isn't, you know, accessible. You physically can't get there unless you've got, you know, at least on the public transport network.
Oh, so I guess the only option there is, you know, if you're able to get a wheelchair taxi. Or I noticed some cities, like I know a lot of American cities, provide what's called paratransit, exclusively for people in wheelchairs. And so
kind of building a separate network.
Yeah, it's like, so it's basically door-to-door. I mean, you obviously there's apps, you know, all these operators have apps, and you just book your trip from where you are to where you want to go.
Yeah.
I'm not aware of any such service that exists here. Like,
yeah, neither am I. Maybe some of the community shuttles kind of things that you they're certainly not well promoted or anything like that.
A lot of buses here, especially since most of the fleet is low floor, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of them have fold out wheelchair ramps.
Mm, yeah.
They started to be implemented, I remember, was about 20 years ago.
Right.
And that's when we also got the first low floor trams. You know, just thought I'd mention that.
Yeah. It's interesting because, yeah, I noticed that, like, the buses have the hydraulic kind of thing where it'll lean to the side.
Yeah.
But I've almost never seen them get the ramp out.
Yeah, it's Yeah, I've seen that a few times there. Sometimes the ramp is folded out, like the driver has to get up and actually physically fold it out and then fold it back up when the person has gotten on or off.
Mm. Yeah, it's not so common to see that kind of happen. And I guess it's not another one of these things where a disabled person has to kind of say, like, can you please get the ramp out for me, driver? Whereas other people have kind of a smoother experience.
Well, the train drivers have a portable ramp.
Mm, yeah, I've seen that.
Which a lot of them keep in the cabin with them.
Mm.
You know, and I think there's one train that actually has a compartment in the carriage, you know, where that ramp is actually stored, which... So there's that, the...
Yeah.
Yeah, there's one type of train that actually has that.
Yeah. So I think we need to see more of these modifications to the network become a lot more standard.
Yeah, I agree.
Because otherwise we will end up in a situation where there's one service for disabled people and another service for everybody else. And that just seems like a shame if we're not including disabled people from the start, like we mentioned in the introduction, then... Yeah, there's going to be, as Melbourne just grows and grows, it becomes bigger and bigger every year, and you know, new suburbs like Melton, you know, start to get connected to the network. If that network's not designed for disabled people in the first place, yeah, there's going to be more and more of the city that, you know, disabled people can't physically get to.
Well, that's right.
So if there's a message for our listeners today about the kind of the innovation that the network needs, what do you think it should be, William?
I think we need to advocate for people with disabilities, you know, make sure that the transport is accessible for them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in my experience is that I am able to walk.
Yeah.
For me, I think the transport should also consider people with visual impairments, such as myself.
And to do that, we've got to involve disabled people right at the start, don't we?
Yeah, because, you know, there's so many different disabilities, and I think we need to hear from all sides of the disabled community.
Yeah, and it's so much more work trying to fit it. You know, disabled, I don't like the word, but like accommodations for disabled people into a network that's not designed to be accessible in the first place than it is to just make it accessible from the start.
Well, see, the thing is, these stations were built over 100 years ago, and back then it wasn't, no one even thought about it.
Right, and we're still scratching our heads about how we can get a wheelchair onto a tram 100 years later.
So, yeah, like I said, 20 years ago, we started getting our first low-floor trams.
Mm-hmm.
But I've noticed a lot of those trams get crowded.
Yeah.
And there's no way that someone in a wheelchair could fit, because the trams are just packed to the brim, especially at, you know, morning and afternoon peak.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's not just the physical design of the network necessarily. Even things like frequency, which benefit everyone benefits from a more frequent network, that it also has accessibility impacts as well, and just in terms of less crowding and in terms of less spread of disease and that kind of thing. I know a lot of people don't use public transport because they're immunocompromised and can't afford to get sick from being in crowded situations like that, with poor ventilation and that kind of thing.
That's right, and I have noticed that even though the mask mandate is long over, some people still wear them.
Yeah, I think it's such a good practice, and it's a shame that, yeah, a lot of people are shut out from the network just because there's not good protocols around disease control anymore. I think we're kind of coming to the end of the show.
Okay.
I'd like to throw out a huge thank to 3CR for having us. Thanks to all the listeners for tuning in to this year's Disability Day for 2025. And huge thanks to Pauline for giving us the slot. And yeah, pleasure doing the show with you, yeah. William.
Yeah, and thank you everyone involved to help make this happen.
Excellent. Yeah. Stay tuned for the rest of Disability Day here on 3CR 855 AM.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.